Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. Before we start this, I have started a community on Discord. I've put the link in the description if you want to come and join and chat about the podcast and talk about, pretty much it's like the one-stop shop for everything I do. We are releasing music on there early. We're releasing all the merch and stuff on there early. We're having discussions and all of that. So if you want to get involved, also we're going to be doing like Q&As and everything like that, and podcast requests and all of that. So please, if you want to get involved, then hit the link. So podcast time this week on the podcast, Chris Liebing. Don't really need to give Chris an introduction. However, we got talking from him playing one of my records, and then he asked me to go on his CLR podcast, and then I asked him to come on here. This conversation was amazing. It's actually the first time I've ever spoke to him in person, and he's such a lovely guy, really, really nice guy. And I love his insight. And he's been in the industry for 25 years, which is a very long time. And during that has had ebbs and flows in his careers and been on the biggest lineups in the world and played some of the biggest festivals in the world and has achieved amazing things that we all desire to achieve. Yeah, this conversation was amazing. I really, really enjoyed it. So without further ado, Chris Liebing. Chris Liebing, what's cooking, man?
I just have to straighten up my headphones here for you.
How are you?
Hello, Will. It's a pleasure to meet you. Pleasure to be on your podcast. Thank you for the invite. And I guess it's really the first time I see you in person.
Yeah, man. I'm really excited about this because I know we've been talking briefly on social media, and obviously I did the mix for you on your podcast. But yeah, it's first time meeting. So great to meet you. Thank you.
Hello.
Whereabouts in the world are you?
I'm in my sauna looking like studio in Switzerland right now.
Is that where you're from?
Today. No, I'm from kind of near Frankfurt in Germany.
Okay.
Yeah. I moved to Switzerland like 2 years ago. I'm in the mountains here.
Oh, wow.
I'm in a little village called Le Chable, which is just underneath Verbier.
Yeah.
It's kind of a very well-known ski area. Mm. And today it was, I looked at the temperature when I was driving to the supermarket and it was 38 degrees.
Oh, that's hot.
It's wild. It's like, and people here are not used to that.
Yeah.
We're like a 1,000 meters high here.
Yeah.
And that's not normal. It's not normal.
How does being 1,000 meters high affect life? Like, do you work out? Like, what does it change how all of that works?
Yeah, it changes the way you travel. That's first of all. My travels are much, much longer. I have to calculate a longer travel time for each destination. And otherwise, it doesn't. I mean, I'm so much more in nature.
Yeah.
It's just incredible. I've been coming here. I'm a skier by heart. Like yeah, yeah. I've been skiing since I was little. And I've been coming to this place, Verbier, here since 30 years already. Mm. So during the pandemic, I've realized I have a lot more friends here, and there's a lot more nature here, obviously, than in Frankfurt. And so I decided to, I actually only wanted to come for the season. And then I decided that was the winter 2021. And then I decided, why don't I just stay here?
Yeah. Wow.
And I moved to Switzerland completely.
That's
and it's
amazing.
Beautiful. I mean, I'm right outside the mountains. I can't show you right now, but it's absolutely mesmerizing. It's in the winter, like the best ski area you can think of.
Yeah.
And in the summer, it's a beautiful hiking and also mountain biking spot. And I got into mountain biking, especially my e-mountain bike.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people say e-mountain bike. Yeah, that's for the lazy people. But actually, you go up the hill with an e-mountain bike, which is kind of a new sport in itself. You know, so
well, I think also it kind of like you don't have to get the ski lift up, which means that you're still doing some sort of exercise and not just sat around doing nothing. So it's a bit lazy, but it's not too lazy. It's
actually not lazy at all, because with the regular mountain bike, you go up the ski lift because those trails that you ride up with an e-mountain bike are impossible to ride up with a normal bike. It's just too steep, it's too crazy, and it changes the map. Since the e-mountain bikes are a thing, the map in the whole area, you can get to places you would never get to in the summer by foot, because it just takes too long, or by bike because it's too steep to get there.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
Are you into biking? Is like biking a big thing for you?
It became mountain biking. It really became. It's quite a sport that I also felt like teaches me a lot of nice life lessons.
Yeah.
The biggest one, he who hesitates loses. and that's all I got to say.
I can imagine it being very humbling as well. My brother used to do it in the Alps, and he like would always come back with broken bones or something. Just they'd all be downhilling, and it was crazy what they would get up to. But it's pretty
dangerous. Yeah.
I was watching, I don't know if you were into like road biking. I'm not, but I recently just watched the Netflix documentary on Tour de France. And have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
Oh dude, it's honestly like, I don't want to tell you what you shouldn't be doing, but go when you have like on a flight, download it on your phone or something and watch it. Those guys are absolute psychos. And like, what they put their bodies through just to like try and win a race. And there's only one person that wins. Like, just coming second in the Tour de France is not a big thing. Like, you have to win the Tour de France. And the whole like how they live their lives, and you're just like, these people are just mad. And I knew it was hard, obviously, it's one of the most famous races in the world, but like, this documentary is done very well and kind of it explains the whole process of it. And yeah, it was an absolute eye opener for me. It was amazing.
Oh, I love those kind of documentaries. So thanks for the hint.
It was like, definitely
look into that.
It was like the Drive to Survive. Did you ever watch the Drive to Survive on Netflix?
No.
Are you a Formula One person?
I've been following Formula One a little bit when I was younger. Yeah. I kind of lost it during the years. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was the same. I kind of liked it a little bit when I was younger, and then it got boring to me. And then Netflix they've done like, I think, 4 seasons now of following Formula One. And they shoot it in a really interesting way. And they the drivers are part of the show. It's really interesting. And they do it in a really good way that just kind of like, I think it just brought a whole new like level of people that aren't actually motorheads into the sport, but they're like interested in the social side of it and everything else. It's really interesting.
My tour manager Ivano actually works for a Ferrari in the Formula One. Like as a part time. Yeah, he installs the little cameras.
Yeah.
In the cars.
No way. You know,
that when you see the race, the POV, it's like his cameras that are installed, and he needs to watch the technology behind it and stuff like that.
That's crazy.
He always invites me. He always like, come by, and I'll have to do it next season.
Dude,
around,
you have
I guess.
To, man. You have to. Yeah. That'd be amazing. Do you travel with a tour manager every show?
Yeah, most of the shows, like there's like a few rare shows where it's just easier for me to do it alone, because of traveling. But the tour manager had been kind of a necessity for me since the early 2000s.
Why is
because
that?
When the whole vinyl thing for me came to an end, it was the beginning of Final Scratch. That was around 2000, 2001. When Final Scratch got invented, which is the predecessor of Traktor, basically.
Yeah.
That's where I started to bring a lot of equipment with me.
Okay.
And, I always had a lot of different stuff, and I never really felt like I wanted to switch over to CDJs. I never really played on CDJs my whole life.
Yeah.
So I switched over to Timecode Final Scratch. And when I realized I don't need to carry as much records anymore and I have all on a laptop, I can basically carry a lot of more equipment with me, like drum machines and effect machines and all that stuff. And setting it up and taking it down and everything just required. Also for traveling, two people a lot of times. And that's how it started.
How do you find that, like, on the business side of things? With having a tour manager, like, is it something that you just have gotten used to as well, that like paying for other people to be along with you, having more members of staff to kind of be part of the crew? Is that something that you just are so used to now that it's part of the parcel?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely an investment.
Totally.
And it was quite an investment, especially in the beginning times where I was like, okay, can I actually afford this?
Yeah.
But I've seen it, you know, sometimes you just cannot just only see the financial side of things, you know, you have to see like how beneficial is it for you?
Yeah.
And what can I do extra because I have an extra person with me?
Yeah.
Is it beneficial for me and therefore beneficial for the crowd? Can I do stuff that I usually couldn't do? And then, you know, in the long run, I think then it makes sense. And when I do gigs on my own, I like that because I like to be on my own quite a bit. But it's like if you have somebody traveling with you, it's just so much nicer. Mm. It's kind of like having a friend coming along, you know. A tour manager always had to be... there always had to be good chemistry between me and the tour manager.
Totally.
I never could go with somebody who's like, you know, just a technician who's on your side and you never talk to. It's kind of like a good friend coming along and you're just sharing responsibilities, and you can concentrate a little bit more on what you do, especially if you have a lot of equipment and have a lot of stuff to set up and sit and take down.
Yeah.
And that was always kind of like that thing that you have to put into consideration. And I guess for me, it was, you get used to it. You totally get used to it. Absolutely. You get lazy in a way too.
Yeah. Cause I guess I've never had a tour manager, but I just DJ off CDJs realistically. Like I've went from vinyl to CDJ. Well, I had like a period of laptop, but that was when I was like a resident DJ in Ibiza. So I wasn't really like setting up and setting down. It was just like always set up and I'd just plug in when I get there. But I totally understand the whole, if you're doing more, I didn't know you DJed like off a laptop and using kind of, other equipment, so it makes complete sense.
You know, I have a machine with me all the time, and then I have like little effects machines and other controllers for my laptop. It's not only Traktor; I use machine as well.
Yeah.
And if I was only DJing with USB sticks, I probably half of the time I would not take anybody with me.
Yeah.
You would probably only take somebody with you if it's like really like big festival gigs where you have to take care of a lot of things simultaneously.
Yeah.
Then it's always really helpful to have somebody on your side.
Yeah. No, my manager comes with me sometimes on like a real big show, and it's It is really nice to have somebody. And like, it sounds weird. Like, I think as DJs, we get used to being by ourselves and start to enjoy being by ourselves. And kind of that alone time of like, you know what, sometimes I don't want to eat out with somebody. I want to just have time by myself, because I think traveling and then going to clubs, it can kind of drain the social kind of batteries in our lives. And I think sometimes like it's nice, it's healthy to have that alone time. But also on counter to that, having somebody with you that you get on really well with, and you can have that, like, you've got the business side of things, but also you can just have a laugh with them and you can have fun, and it can kind of take the brain away from what you're actually doing. And I think that's really healthy as well.
Yeah, no, not only that, it's like, I'm sometimes a socially awkward person, like I guess all of us are in a way. That's why we're standing behind the decks and not in front of them.
Yeah.
You know, walking into a venue or something, I like just to be together with somebody. It takes away the tension of you a little bit, you know, the pressure of you have to be like immediately there with everybody and take care of everything. You know, you can, like, as you say, you can like just share a little, the talks, you know, and the responsibilities and it's just a little bit, it takes away a little bit the pressure from the performance side of things as well. And once you get used to that, it's really hard to let go.
That makes sense. This is really random and like a very side question, but I'm intrigued about these tattoos. I've never really noticed them, but are they all like, is it, what is
Ganesha?
Is there like reasoning behind all of this or not?
Kind of. It is all done by one or two artists only. Yeah. So, you know, you have a lot of people who have a lot of different tattoos from different places, which I really think is a great idea. Yeah, you know, you start here and you, because you travel so much, you meet different tattoo artists and you get different things, which kind of puts a little bit of a diary on your skin, you know, like a travel journal in a way. But for me, it was, I got into tattooing really late in my life, like when I was like in my 30s already.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I really, like, I don't know, I just felt like I wanted to get a tattoo, which has always felt like that. But it never happened, because I was always like, I got to have the right tattoo artist. Yeah. And then in Vienna, I had a friend who had really amazing tattoos, and I was like, who did that? And he was like, okay, this is a guy called Klaus Fuhrmann, and whoever is in tattooing probably knows that name.
Yeah.
He's a very underground but worldwide famous tattoo artist.
Okay.
And he's a really underground guy. Like, he doesn't even have a studio.
Oh,
really.
Wow.
Like, where you can walk into. Yeah. You kind of only get to him if you know somebody who knows him.
Okay.
And then you have to be referred to him, and then he actually has to be kind of like in a good mood to tattoo you. So meaning you have to jump through a lot of hoops, you know. And my first tattoo was on my leg, and it was literally an 8-hour session. My whole lower leg tattoo. Actually,
get it out.
That
okay.
one?
Yeah.
that was one session. In 8 hours. It was my very first tattoo that I ever did.
That's a big leap. And that's a big leap into the tattoo life.
And I had no idea what I was wanted to do, and this guy just gave me an address. If you want to hear the whole story.
Yeah, I do. I really do.
He just gave me the address. It must have been in 2004, maybe. I don't know. So somewhere in Vienna, somewhere in like back alleys of like old houses back there, I walk into this apartment, and there's this guy like looking at me. He's like, "Hi," just sit down there. And I'm like, "Oh, okay." Super nervous, you know. Don't know what to do. And the meeting, like, I was supposed to be there at like I think 1 p.m. like just after. And the first thing he was like, you know, I have to do some other stuff, like in a really heavy Vienna accent. And whoever speaks German, like, Vienna has a different accent than the rest of Austria.
Yeah.
And the Vienna accent, the Vienna Austrian, is, I love it. It's just such an amazing accent and dialect. It's so good. And he's like, you really have to concentrate when you listen to this. And he was like, oh, I gotta go and do some stuff, and I, you know, take care of my kids here and there, and go. And then he was gone for like 2 hours, and I would be just sitting there like, okay, I'm not gonna go anywhere, I'm not gonna do anything. And then he came back, and he just did a million other things, you know. And in hindsight, it was literally to test my patience.
If you wanted
to see what kind of guy I am, wow. If I'm kind of worthy of his tattoo.
Wow.
You know, because he's a guy, if I would have come in with like, I want to have this on my leg, yeah. You know, he would be like, all right, there's a lot of million tattoo studios around the corner or somewhere in the city. Yeah. Just go there and have it done. You know,
yeah.
If you come to me, then we'll figure things out. Like,
I respect that a lot though.
Yeah, it was like, oh, okay, all right. And he was just asking me, he's like, where do you want to have a tattoo? And I was like, well, maybe on my leg. Yeah, all right. You know, maybe I'll have some. I felt really, really dumb at that point. I still feel dumb at a lot of points. But I was like, oh, maybe like some Chinese or Japanese symbol or something like that. And he's looking at me like, what? What are you talking about? You know, just, okay, just smoke a joint, lie down, and just like, and he took a pen, yeah, basically, and he drew something on my leg, and he drew it so it would fit my anatomy.
Yeah.
Anatomy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's very specialized in his like kind of like what do you call it? Like the circles, the spirals, the spirals. He's very specialized in the spirals. Like,
yeah,
like I can show, you know, okay, these yeah, spirally yeah, things, yeah, you know? So he would just basically start drawing on your leg. And then I look it down and my leg's like, whoa, this is a big tattoo. And he's like, well, are you here to get a tattoo, or you want to have like a little stamp and you can go somewhere else as well? Like a really kind of a grumpy attitude. And I was like, all right, I'll just follow whatever, you know? And then I looked at it and it was like, all right, well, it looks good. Like, let's do this, you know? It's just, it has no symbolism. It's
yeah,
just
yeah.
Like a
piece of art.
Like it looks beautiful. It looks like nice, you know, yeah. It has no message. It has nothing. And I was like, all right, then, yeah. So I got a little nervous, like, is tattooing going to hurt and whatever. And that was around 6 p.m. And then he kind of disappeared again. And ultimately, making a long story short, he started tattooing at 9 p.m. So I was already there for 8 hours,
wow.
Like, hanging out, like not knowing what's going to happen. And then he started tattooing, and there were like people coming in and out, and he would stop and start tattooing again. And it was just like, I'm lying on my side and it just like hurts like hell. And he's like, but he was pretty good. He kind of like, he's a grumpy guy, but he's a really nice guy, like yeah. Underneath his like
yeah,
thick
yeah.
skin. And he knew like if it was hurting too much at one point, he would just start at another point. But everything he does is freehand.
Wow.
He literally just he looks at what he drew on your leg, and then while tattooing, and you know, you kind of clean it a lot of times,
yeah,
it just goes away, whatever he drew. But he kind of in his head, he knew exactly what he needed to do, and everything completely freehand. And at 3 at night, like literally like 6-7 hours later, he was like, I'm done. And I looked at my leg and it was completely done. And I was like, wow, what a crazy experience that was. What a also spiritual experience.
Yeah.
Like my patience was tested. My judgment was tested. My being in the moment was very, very much tested. You
yeah.
know, it was like, what's happening with me? My surrendering to the moment
totally.
Was like big time. There was so many things going on in this 1-2 sessions, which mesmerized me. It was just like literally like, and with your first tattoo you're just like glowing. And I remember we went to an Indian restaurant right after at 4 a.m. in Vienna because it was open, and we had some Indian food, and I was sitting there, my leg was glowing, and that was my first tattoo. And from that moment on, I kind of became friends with this guy, with
yeah.
Klaus.
You almost have to in a situation like that, like when you're going through that and it's not just like a transaction and you've spent that much time with somebody, you almost have to be friends with them. There's no way
yes.
not to be, which I kind of really respect from him, because I think that's, if you kind of analyze it from a outsider's point of view and from what you're saying, is like, that's all he wants. He just wants cool people to draw on.
Yeah. And he has his art, and he doesn't want to do any compromise on his art. Like, he told me about there's some people who went to him and wanted to have like a big dragon, and they showed him the picture, and he was like, go somewhere else. You know, it's like, I'm not going to do this for you. If you want to have a dragon, if you want to have something, then let me draw the dragon. Yeah. Let me like do my interpretation of things. And it is a very artistic view, and I totally respect that. And every time you go there, you just basically, you tell them, let's meet at 12 or let's meet at 1, and you know you're not going to start within the first 6 hours. You're just not going to start tattooing, because he has his ritual. Yeah. You know, he rolls a joint, he puts like his wine there, then he does his whole like setup, you know, cleans his everything, does everything like really nicely. Everything needs to be at the right spot. And then once he's done, you're like, oh, we start tattooing. He's like, all right, we should go for dinner or something. Oh, really? Oh, okay. Then we go for dinner, you know? And it is an absolutely amazing experience with him. And I still got to go back, because that was the last thing. We still need to finish my hand here.
Yeah.
And another little anecdote, if I may add, is like, I'm not super truthful if I say he was the only tattoo artist. I once was in LA and I wanted to have a skull on my arm. And there's a really famous tattoo artist, and I know a band. I don't want to name names now. I know a band in LA. And they were like, hey, we can go to this tattoo artist. He's amazing. He can draw you like, he can do your like skull on here. You're like, here,
yeah.
Sorry,
oh, yeah.
This one. And I was like, all right, let's do this, you know? And I just didn't tell Klaus.
What was his response?
To be honest, the skull didn't come out that nicely.
Yeah.
It didn't. And there I realized, like, this is a really fucking famous tattoo artist in LA, you know, like with, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of followers on Instagram, you know?
Yeah.
And he just basically like puts a skull on there, which kind of didn't look that great. Even the perspective was a little wrong. It was like really weird.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, well, you know, this is what I talked about in the beginning. You go to places and you get tattoos. That was kind of my idea. It's like, okay, I'll just collect. And I didn't like it. And so when I came back to Europe, I was like, Klaus, you have some time. Can I come by? And he's like, yeah, of course. It'll just like come by. And we made a date, and I came. It's like, you know, I kind of cheated on you. I went somewhere and he's like, let me look at it. And it was like, he was like, what an idiot are you? Like, what the hell did you do? It's like, I'm basically doing your arm with everything, you know? It's like, nothing is really finished ever if you start tattooing. And then you have this stupid skull there. And he looked at me, and I was like, can you make it nicer, please? Can you just like make it nicer? And he looks at me and says like, nope. Dude, you fucked up there, and you gotta live with this shit. Give me your other arm, and we're gonna work on your other arm.
Yeah,
you know, I'm happy to keep on going there. And I was like, really? Okay. Like, and then he was tattooing for like 1 or 2 hours on this arm, and I was always like looking at my at this skull, and I was like, it really doesn't look good. And at some point he was like, oh, shut up, give me your arm. And then he just started tattooing over the skull and made it much nicer, a little better. It's very black now because he had to fill in a lot of things.
Yeah.
But you know, but that's the beauty with tattoos. It tells a story. It's like, it's amazing stories. It's the moments. It's the tattoos really remind me on these amazing, almost spiritual experiences that you go through. And I'm forever grateful to have met Klaus, and every time I go there is another amazing experience where you really have to let go of expectations, any expectations of what's the outcome, when are you going to be done, are you going to be done ever, are you going to do something. Like, lose your expectations, just surrender to the moment. It's beautiful,
which is a really amazing feeling with really good art. And I think it's really interesting because in the industry that we're in, we create art. However, I feel like there's huge amount of expectations with everything we do. What?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And it's like,
I agree. Every time you step behind the decks, I mean, you created those expectations, right?
Yeah.
With your previous gigs.
Yeah.
People are going to tell their friends, hey, we've got to watch this Will Clark DJ. He's just rocked it so hard last time I saw him. He's back in town. Let's go there. And not that you really know that this is happening, but you kind of like, you step up to the plate and you're about to start playing and the feeling is already there. It's like, yeah, there's a lot of people with a few expectations now that because you have some sort of reputation to do something, like you better do this now. You better fulfill expectations. Yeah.
Where for you though, like, because I think it's really interesting that tattoo kind of story, because a lot of it does link in with what we do. But where in your career have you compromised?
Quite a few times.
Yeah.
I mean, if you don't, there's a few artists who can afford not to compromise at all.
Mm.
And blessings to them. It's like, this is amazing. If you make it that far that you don't have to compromise, you know, who comes to mind? Maybe Aphex Twin comes to mind.
Yeah.
You know.
There's not many.
There's not many. But I always felt like, you know, here's the paradox. You have your art, you have your window of what you allow yourself to do, like, or the range. Let's put it this way. I have a certain range, and I think everybody has that, where you are happy to play within, you know? It should not get too melodic for me. It should not get too experimental for me.
Yeah.
It should have a sweet spot where I'm really enjoying myself without that my cheese o meter doesn't go into the red.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? But you wanna basically present your art to the people and give them your idea of things and send them on the journey that you prepare for them. Mm. Yet you also want to reach as many people as possible somehow, because you don't want to just be the exclusive, like, super nerd with just a little niche, because I feel like if I just compromise a little bit, I might reach a little bit more people and pull them into that sector where I'm feeling comfortable. And that sector is always floating. And I do think back in like 2013, 14, 15, maybe 16, maybe even 17, I tried to play a little bit more to, how would you describe that best? To the terrace crowds? Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To the terrace of Miami space.
Yeah, yeah.
Club.
Yeah.
The terrace at Amnesia, yeah. You know? And in hindsight, I have to say it wasn't my thing.
Mm.
I compromised way too much and it didn't feel great. I convinced myself this is a great thing to do now. You're gonna be playing a little bit more like trancey vibes or housey vibes and not realizing that there's a lot more DJs who can do that way better than I do.
Yeah,
you know. And it's pretty quickly showed me that you have to find your place, you know. Yeah. you have to know where you belong.
What,
and if you, yeah,
sorry, I want to go back to that. What was the catalyst to make you want to go to do that?
I think it was an ego thing, a pure ego thing, to be very honest with you, to not only be the guy who plays the techno sets where everybody has his hands up, I also wanted to be the guy who's able to play on the terrace.
Yeah.
Like, I want to show people what a great guy I am. I can also play on the terrace and do this, but on the terrace, nobody wants to hear like the super hot shit. Everybody wants to like groove around, and you have, most importantly, the tables that get sold with all the rich people.
Yeah.
And you don't want to annoy the rich people with like super experimental like sounds. Because they're going to leave, and then the club is super, super angry at you. You're never going to play there again because those rich people who are spending all the money, they're sitting on the terrace tables. They're not in the main room. Let's say Amnesia, you know, and I think it was really an ego thing. It was like I wanted to prove to everybody and to myself I can do this too, and I'm such a versatile DJ, I can do this.
Yeah.
But I was betraying myself in a way, you know.
100%.
I mean, not that I went overboard musically, it was still something that I would also listen to myself, but it didn't, in hindsight, it didn't feel right.
Yeah.
And I feel a little embarrassed. Actually, I feel a little embarrassed that I did that.
But I think, no, I get that. And I, to be honest, I think a lot of people do that in their careers at some point where it's like, it's almost like the grass is greener on the other side to a certain extent. And it's like I also want what they have. And for me, like in my kind of experience, it can be kind of like an envy thing, not jealousy, but more envy, where it's like, I want them to still have that, but I also want that as well. And I want to be able to prove that I can do that as well. And
yeah,
I totally. So what was the,
did you fall into this trap yet?
What happened with it? At the beginning of, not the very beginning of my career, but when I first started touring as like a, without sounding like a dickhead, like an international DJ, like I signed to a record label called Dirty Bird. And I was making music that was very Dirty Bird sounding.
What year was that?
2015 was like my first year of like.
It was kind of like Dirty Bird high times.
It was high times in America for them. They'd just fallen off in Europe. Right. It was like they got uncool in Europe, but it was like very big in America. And I'd been playing Dirty Bird since like 2008. But it was like the label that I really wanted to be on, and I loved the music. The music, especially at the beginning of the label and the kind of the short time that I was on the label, it was a really interesting musical time for me and for like the industry, where a lot of labels were really pushing music forward for me. Like Poker Flat Recordings at that time was just releasing insane music at that time. Like it was just a very interesting time for music. And with Dirty Bird, it got to the point musically where it kind of became a bit gimmicky for me. And this is only my opinion, whether it's right or wrong, it is. But like I started wanting to like, I never really like fit in with that sound. Like it was always like, I loved it. And I loved making it. But all the other people around me were like, it was their sound. It was never my sound.
How did that make you feel when you were DJing as well?
At the beginning, it was cool. But I think I just grew out of it, really. Mm. And it was a really hard transition for me to leave that sound to go into what I then wanted to do. And because I didn't want to play on as a Dirty Bird artist anymore, but everybody knew me as a Dirty Bird artist. Even now, like I just did a podcast with Heidi and she thought I was American, like before, like we've spoken before, but only in clubs. She thought I was an American artist. Like she didn't know I'm from Bristol and from the UK and like the background behind. And I don't blame her for that. If you know what I mean, that's just like what a lot of people's kind of initial, that's how I was introduced to the world on Dirty Bird, which is an American record label. And I made like Chicago ghetto house, really. And like, but the hard bit for me was the transition from, it's like I have to give up what I have here to get to where I want to get to here, and in that time I also then have to explain to people what I'm doing with, because it took ages and it still does. I still have that battle. And I don't think, for me, it's like, it's not, and then I'm where I'm at today, I still don't really feel like I fit anywhere. Like, because I write music that not everyone plays. I don't necessarily always write like music that is made for DJs to go and play. I make music that I just want to make and comes out. Like, let's say, for instance, like the Nicole Mudaba remix that I did, which is how we kind of got in touch with. Like,
right.
That's not... It's a Will Clark record. It's a Will Clark remix. But like, do all my records fit? Like, would you play all of my records? No. Like, and there's some records I wouldn't even send you because I'm like, Chris is never going to play this and probably would take the piss out of me for even releasing this because it's just so far away from it. So I think that's the thing that I struggle with, is like me wanting to be part of like the Terrace crew or the Techno crew and all of that. But realistically, I'm just not part of any crew because I just write music. I'm just writing music and releasing music that feels like me, if that makes sense.
But isn't that an awesome thing? I mean, I always keep telling everybody who's like young and upcoming, is like, you always get this question. It's like, what's a good advice you could give? You know, and I always give the advice, like, just really be yourself.
Yeah.
Like, just do what you want to do. Of course, you can look left and right and be inspired by everything. You need to be, you know, but that's an amazing thing. And I think you are a really amazing example of doing your thing and having loads of success with it. And maybe sometimes it takes a little longer because you're not directly into one of those compartments that everybody wants to push you in. Like, you're going to be playing in that main room, or you're going to play in the techno room, you're going to play in the house room, you're going to play, you know, and I get it. It's really difficult. It's like, look at a festival. Are you going to play on the stage?
That's
probably the biggest issues that you usually have. Are you going to play on the stage with Jamie Jones and Marco Carola and these people? Are you going to be playing on the stage with Nicole and Carl Cox? Are you going to be playing on the stage with Ben Clock and Marcel Detman? Yeah. Where are you going to be at? You know, because you could fit everywhere.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting because, yes, you're right. 100%. That was literally my goal. And it was like me and my manager sat down at the time when I took him on and we were like, this is what we want to do. So there is like a level of it's a beautiful thing. A classic example, like earlier on in the summer, like I was playing in Ibiza with Calvin Harris. And then the next day I played Amsterdam Radion with DJ Bone and Ben Sims. And you're like, it's fucking wild if you think about it, because that just doesn't work. But again, that's, I guess we're doing it. But it's, to going back to the question, it's, there is sometimes when you question, are you doing the right thing?
Yeah, always. Absolutely.
Because
because
I think with your career, and please tell me if I don't want to offend you, but
no.
Like, from me as an outsider's point of view, listening to your career evolve, and like from back in the day where you'd be playing pretty hard music, it was like, it was very pretty tough from what I can remember, to like now where it's, I don't know if it's just like you've purposely done it or it's just your tastes have changed, but it feels a little bit more like, not accessible, because I don't want to make it sound like you're a commercial DJ, because you're not. You're fucking making great techno music. But it feels like it's a step back, if that makes sense. Was that a purposely done, or was that just purely just change of taste?
I've realized every change that I purposely did was wrong.
Okay.
So... because that's where your ego wants to be. I don't have any other like way to describe this. Your ego, where you think you're going to have more success or something, however you want to define that success, like you have more bookings, you have better play times and whatever. So you kind of think like, okay, I'll purposely change a little bit my music. The good thing with me always was that I always had this, limit. How can I say that? Does it make sense if I say cheese limit?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I get
you
it.
Where if I cross this line, if I play, for example, this one track, which is really cheesy, then I would not be able to look at myself in the mirror tomorrow again anymore. I've sold my soul. Yeah. I'm done.
Yeah.
And luckily, I've always had that in my life.
Yeah.
Always. Like when it came to music, I always had that and I always stuck to this principle. So even in the years which I've mentioned between 2014 and 2017, where I kind of ventured out into like the more accessible melodic terrace kind of music, there was still that one like definitely wall that I would not break. You know, that limit where I was like, no, I'm not willing to go there. Like, if this would mean I get the biggest gig, I'm not willing to do this. Yeah. I'm not willing to go there because I cannot look myself in the mirror. So that kind of saved me. That kind of saved me. And I feel extremely comfortable where I am right now again, you know. And when I look back 20 years, the times where you say it sounded all very hard, that was not on purpose. It was just what felt right to me.
I
came from Frankfurt. My DJ school was the Omen in Frankfurt, where I was resident from 95 to 98 until it closed. The music back then was kind of way more, I think, all over the place in your DJ set when you played like 8-9 hours at the Omen. It was not only like 140 BPM loop techno.
Yeah.
You played like Matthew Herbert, Wish Mountain, this stuff, you know, and trancey stuff, which came out of Frankfurt at that time as well, obviously, IQ, Hard House Records and stuff like this. And but the time moved on, the early 2000s moved on, and I just felt really comfortable. And when you look left to the left of the right, and you found like-minded people back then who were kind of also were into this sound, you know, like Speedy J, Steve Rahmat, Gaetano Parisio, back then actually Marco Carola as well, you know, and just for those people who weren't around back then, it was much, much less heavy than the music is today.
Yeah, 100%.
Today, sometimes I get to festivals and the DJ before me plays like 150, 160 BPM.
It's gross.
And it wasn't like that.
But
back then, I always felt like, even if it's 144 loop techno, it has to have a soul in it.
Yes,
it
thank
has
you.
To have soul. It has to have groove in there.
Yeah.
It has to be some sort of like, and then... DJ Rush and I, we were really successful, like let's say around 2002, 2003, 2004. It was like massive. It's like, wow, like this is, and then there was a young generation coming up producing this, like basically standing on the dance floor listening to us, going back to the studio and producing it. And but I didn't like the sound that they produced, because they produced, it sounded kind of like the same. It was the same structure, but there was kind of that soul was missing. It was very mechanical beats, like, you know, and I somehow can make that difference. And I can immediately spot, like listening to a 4 or 5 bar loop, there is kind of like this soul thing in there, or it's just a mechanical loop that's just put together out of the idea that it has to be a mechanical fast loop. And so I think that also is part of that cheese meter that I had. Because if you lose your soul, it's not getting cheesy, but you know what I mean. It's also getting outside of my limitations. It's like I wouldn't want to do that. It would feel cold. I would feel it wouldn't give me any of that. Then the minimal movement started to become big, and you are not independent of your environment around you. Again, there's certain artists who do their thing, and they're like blessed to be able to do this. But me, I'm very easily influenced, maybe. But the minimal movement came in, and automatically everything started to slow down.
Yeah.
And I kind of really enjoyed it, because if you slow down music, the place between the kick drums becomes wider.
Yeah.
the more space are between the kick drums, the more place is there for soul and groove, maybe.
Yeah.
I agree. That's kind of like how I see it. The faster it gets, the less it's possible to put anything between the kicks. It's a physical thing, physics. And I kind of like that. And so that you are influenced, and so I'm influenced by that. And then it just keeps going. But I always, again, just to come back to that, I always had my limits, and I'm happy that I always had them, because otherwise I probably wouldn't be sitting here anymore. Because if you really lose it and you just pander to a certain crowd and you're just like, it's not your, like, I could never play music that I don't enjoy myself. I would just feel so stupid.
And it's
just not working.
And I think there's also some artists out there that I also respect that are willing to just bandwagon jump, and they create music that fits with everything else, and they get to, and they tour, and to a certain extent I really respect that, because I couldn't personally do that. Like, I can't write a record that's on trend, if you know what I mean. But
I totally I think it's great. I think those artists are amazing. Same. Like, they are able to do something that I'm not able to do.
Yeah, totally.
And I think if they do this, they kind of feel it as well.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they wouldn't be successful. I think in the long run, as a DJ, you cannot fool the crowd.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Like, they kind of they sense if you're genuine or if you're like just pretending.
Yeah. No, totally. I think that's anything, and I think it goes back to that soul thing. Is there's a lot of stuff that's being made. I don't know your opinion. I'd like to get your opinion on it, but like, it's just soulless, utter shit. And I sound like an old man by saying that, but it's true. And I know there's a lot of very successful people out there, but I just don't see it lasting. And I don't see the TikTok techno being around for long at all, or the trance thing that's going around again, and the kind of there's no forward thing pushing music. It's like very like, and I know in house music and techno we've always looked back and we've always taken influence from previous, but for me it just feels very lazy right now. In we make music that will do well on social media and it will get the biggest response in a crowd, but realistically we're only doing this for commercial gain. That doesn't last.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
You know, I don't want to defend those things and those people, but there's obviously a demand, you know.
100%.
There's obviously, and we are in very, very interesting times right now.
I don't know if there is a demand. I think the only reason why there is, and this is, I really want to debate this because I'm really interested in it, but like, and I don't want to be disrespectful to people that come to shows, but I think you go to a show and you play an ABBA record, right? Of course you're going to get a response from that. If you play, and let's just say, for instance, somebody made a techno remix of an ABBA record. I'm sure it's been done. And they played it, right?
Mm-hmm.
There is a demand for that. Because it's commercially, it was a number one for God knows how many weeks. years and years ago, and it's been, we've all grew up with this music. We all know it. It's very easily kind of, it's bootlegs, right? We all have bootlegs. We've all released bootlegs. We've all done that, if you know what I mean. So yes, there is like a demand for that to a certain extent. But when you base your whole career about on those, is there longevity in that?
If you're really good at it, I think there's some DJs who are very successful in that. I mean, David, look what David Guetta is doing. I mean, that's essentially that what you're saying, isn't it?
I don't know, because I think David Guetta's trying to be a pop star and is a pop star. Look at Calvin Harris.
Yeah.
Like Calvin, this is the two different things. It's like, I'm talking more so about the techno scene, not the pop world. Because I think what we're seeing now in the techno is a lot of people, I just think it's lazy producing when they go find, and it's happening in the pop world, but it's like they go find the biggest sample they could possibly do and just put a massive kick drum over it, and then that's the record. For me, that's not that interesting. Like for me, sampling has always been about, you go find a really interesting sample and you make that into your own thing. Whereas with what David Guetta's doing or with what Calvin's doing, they're making pop records. They're just in a completely different league. Like when I played with Calvin, you sit and watch and you're like, it makes me want to stop writing music, because every single record he writes has been a number one hit record. And you're like, fuck me, how does he do it? The talent is insane. But I guess my thing that I'd like to get your opinion on is more so the super hard 160 BPM techno. Is there longevity in that?
That's a two-part answer.
No, yeah, that's go for it.
Because I went through this. Went through this myself. Let's put it this way. A DJ, let's not name names here.
No.
A DJ who is very successful in playing hard music right now, years ago approached me and asked me, he's like, Chris, you've been there in the early 2000s, you know, kind of.
Yeah.
You've been there. How long can I do this? How long does it last? And then my answer was, first of all, as long as you enjoy it yourself, that's the biggest rule that I always have for myself. I don't, you know, everybody should do whatever, but it does like what they feel comfortable with. But I can only excite other people by doing something that excites me.
Yeah, totally.
So I need to be excited by what I'm doing. If I'm bored by what I'm doing, I know the crowd is going to be bored. Like, I need to be excited. This is why we're hunting for new music.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, otherwise we could always play the same set. Like, I'm super quickly bored. So I need to, but at the same time, I don't really find a lot of new music. So yeah. I need to find ways to recreate things that I do, like combine the tracks and mixing them, remixing them apart. And this is, I guess, why I have that equipment, because I try to like play the same, but still mixing it up. Anyways, that question was asked and I was like, well, you know, back in like 2003, 4, 5, 6 or something like that, what I experienced, there was in the north of Spain, it was like my biggest market was the north of Spain, because it was just like loop techno to the max, and just like people wanting to hear like these like really hard grooves and sounds, and I really enjoyed playing it. But at some point I was bored by it. I was like, I was just like, I was not excited by it anymore. So I found other records and I slowed the tempo down. And there was two things happening. Like at one point the hard music, that was my answer to the DJ, was like, once you notice your crowd is becoming more and more male in front of you, that's like the first step into something is not right, because you're losing the female energy here.
Yeah.
You're only having the male energy really, really aggressive, really like, you know? So that's kind of the first sign that things are going to go downhill and it's not going to last for long.
Yeah.
And then the next step is that you have guys in front of you with no shirts. Like they lose their shirts and have eyes like this. And then if you look into your crowd and you have only like guys with no shirts in front of you, like this in front of you, then, and you don't really enjoy that anymore, then it's the moment where you probably should start thinking, is like, am I still doing the right thing here? And for me, that kind of happened, like I wasn't playing that fast anymore. And in Spain, in the north of Spain, I suddenly had people standing in front of me like doing this.
Wow. You know?
We're falling asleep to your music, and I was still playing 140 BPM.
Wow!
Or they were like basically holding their shoes up, which I think I'm not so fluent in Spanish. Like zapato is shoe.
Okay.
And there's a similar word for faster.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Holding your shoe up meant like you gotta faster. Go faster. Yeah, and then I had loads of middle fingers in front of me too.
Wow.
And that's where I thought, like, all right, I'm done with this. I'm not going to play in north of Spain anymore now.
Yeah.
It's like, and you know, parties would literally only start at 9 in the morning. Your main playtime was 9 in the morning, you know. And it's just like, no, I can't do this anymore. So when you have these signals coming up, it's time that things are changing, yeah. Starting to change, you know.
The female thing, that's a really interesting, sorry to butt in, but that's a really interesting thing because I think, like, I used to talk quite a lot with MK, and like we're pretty good mates. And that's the one thing I always noticed when I went to his shows. Obviously, he's made number one records. We're in a different league of writing music, but it's the one thing I noticed every time was there was always every single show, there was two or three layers of girls at the front, and ticket sales kept on growing and growing and growing and growing to the point where like everything he does is sells out. And it was always a thing that we're currently with the same managers, but we were at different management together. And that was the one thing they said. And it sounds really wrong to say in a weird way, but it's like, make sure there's females at your shows. Write music that females listen to, and the guys will turn up to the shows. And you don't have to worry about the guys. But if you're just selling music to guys, eventually it will fall off. And it's exactly what you said. It's very interesting you say that. It's so true.
Yeah. I mean, nothing against the guys, but the females seem to be smarter. They have a better sense of a vibe that's going on. But I wanted to get to the second part of my answer.
Yeah, go for it.
And that is like, we're really in interesting times right now. So back then I realized, okay, the guys take off their shirts. There's only guys in front of you. This is not where I want to be. This is like not my world anymore. I'm not excited by this anymore. I find it mechanical. The soul is missing. The love is missing. I don't want to do this anymore. So you kind of go into kind of a little bit like of a crisis. It's like, oh my God, but this is what I'm known for, but I don't really want to do it anymore. You know, you have that, those issues, but I mean, you'll find your way. No career just always goes like this.
Never.
Just like, and we're in a beautiful DJ career, you know, we can always develop, and you should be okay with like having maybe 1, 2, 3 years of finding yourself a new groove, of finding something new. It's great. The DJ world is amazing because it allows you to do that once you kind of in there, you know, it's beautiful, and I'm really grateful for that. But now we are in a time that we have we've had a pandemic, and it, you know, when the year 22 was still kind of like everybody kind of like found themselves again. There's a lot of people now. We all start to realize there's a lot of young people out there who really need to let some steam off.
Yeah,
who were home for 2, maybe even 3 years, weren't able to go out, weren't able to party, were in their prime. Like imagine go back to your own like teenage years. You're 17, 18, 16 years old. You want to go out? No, you're locked down for like a year or two. You're not allowed to go out. So you have to let off a lot of steam. And that is kind of my explanation why the music is so hard and crazy right now. And that's what I meant with like, there's a demand for it out there right now, because people just want to let off steam, and they just don't care anymore what DJ is playing. They just want to go, and it should be like off the knockers, like yeah. And there's girls and guys, like like I watch videos of on Instagram of hard DJs, and there's as many girls as guys like having it.
Yeah.
And I love it. It's great to see. I love when a crowd has a great time.
No, you know? That's what
I don't necessarily need to do this. You know, I don't want to be part of this because I don't feel that music.
Yeah.
But it's amazing that they're all having this awesome time. But it's not going to last forever because it's going to, the same thing is going to happen. The girls, the smarter ones, you know, there will be a little bit like, it's a little too, getting too aggressive for me. Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, and I promise you, I don't know how long it's going to take, but that is the way it's going to go, you know, and all these hard DJs, amazing that they have so much success. They should really also kind of expect the moment where they look around and like, where are the girls? What's happening here?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Well,
you know?
I think we're nearly in the next couple of years. I think we're nearly there because like with what kind of music the crew are doing, with what Black Coffee does, with kind of like that whole vibe. And I know Black Coffee's been doing it for years and been extremely successful for years, but like especially with what kind of music crew are doing at this moment in time, and you're seeing the like, it's a little bit of an older crew. It's a little bit of an older kind of mentality, but they were almost the people that were like partying before lockdown, before the pandemic. And now they've came back and they're like, we want something a little bit more chill. We want something a little bit more of a party. We want something where we can dress up and we can look good at, and we don't sweat our tits off all night long. And we're not in those kind of dark, dingy raves. And there's like the polar opposites of the industry,
yeah,
where, and then you have the tech house bro kind of thing that's going on as well. It's a really interesting time. And I don't know if it's ever been like this, where there's so much stuff that's so successful, right? There's like, there's so many different pockets that are like, wow, like how, like even like, have you heard of this artist called Lil Texas?
No.
So he's been on the podcast, but he's like hard style, like on another level of hard style, like 1,000 BPM style. Like it's wild what he's doing. And he sells tickets everywhere. He's huge. And you're just like, even pre-pandemic, there wasn't this much, there wasn't this much available. There wasn't this demand for electronic music. And I think we're just in a really interesting time.
It's a very interesting time. People just, they have to catch up. They have to, like, you know, again, they were locked down for a while. I really don't envy any talent buyer for big festivals right now. It's like you have to be all over the place. Like it used to be so simple in a way. Yeah. You have your house guys, you have your techno guys, you program your festival.
Yeah.
Now it's like, wow, you have like a range, which is beautiful in a way. It's beautiful.
It's great.
You know, it's like you have a range of DJs and you have a lot of new faces and there's a lot of new talent out there. And I have never seen this in the past 25 years, to be honest. Such a variety of music, such a variety of artists, of young emergent artists.
Yeah.
And as threatening that is to the old guys like myself, as beautiful I find it, because it just keeps things interesting and it keeps pulling people, more and more people, as you say, into electronic music. And I think the scene hasn't been as varied and big as it is now.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I realistically don't know when you like say the threatening, I'm sure you don't feel that though, but like I've never felt threatened by other artists being successful. I think like there's so much space for everybody in this. There's more shows, there's more clubs popping up, there's more festivals. Well, maybe not more clubs, a lot of clubs are closing down, sadly, but like there's more festivals, there's more like opportunity for people to have a successful career in music, which, if I'm truly honest, I'd love everybody in the world to be artists, because what better way to kind of run the world in a non-hippy-dippy way is like, fucking hell, we have the best lives ever, and we get to express ourselves in a way that a lot of people don't. And I think the interesting time right now is like, will this remain? Is this the new normal? Is this how we carry on? I don't know. I'm really, really excited.
We have, you remember we did a show called DJs and Beers in the Pandemic.
Yeah.
And and we still have that WhatsApp group. And and it's funny, we send each other like sometimes videos and like we discuss things in this WhatsApp group. And it's funny that you say this, because recently I was just like, I think Ali or Matt was posting something or just sending a link of some crazy gig of somebody. And we're all like, oh my God, this is like, terrible music. Terrible. and then I was thinking about it for 2 days, and then I actually wrote into the group, guys, maybe that is not temporary. Maybe that's the new normal.
Yeah.
Maybe that is the taste. Maybe that's it, you know? And I just want to quickly get back to, because we're very honest here, I would just really quickly get back to the point where you said, like, you don't feel threatened. I get that. And I'm so happy for everybody's success, you know?
Yeah.
This is like, that's the part that where you want to be, like I want to be, supporting everybody's success and happy for everybody's success, because honestly, you're totally right. It doesn't take away anything from me if somebody else is successful. That's a stupid way of thinking. But if you look back in, like, let's say the first 10, 15 years of the 2000s, there was, like, in the festival circuit that where I was basically present, there were literally like maybe 15 DJs, you know? You can name them, like Sven Fate, Richie Horton, Luciano, Ricardo Villalobos, maybe myself, you know, maybe 20 DJs.
Carl
We're
Cox,
basically at every festival.
Yeah.
You had your spot at your festivals. You had your, you were settled.
Yeah.
You were like, well, you know, of course I play this festival again. Of course I play this festival again, you know? And these times have changed.
And it
is threatening to your little fragile DJ ego that I also have. And it's like, wait a minute, why don't I have that slot anymore at that festival?
Yeah.
What's going on? Who is this person who has my slot suddenly? You know? So if you were around like back in the early 2000s on these festival circuits with these techno guys, and suddenly you look at like half the lineup, you have no idea who these people are.
Yeah.
It is really messing with your DJ ego.
Yeah.
And there's two ways to go about it. Like, you can become bitter and angry and you're just like, because I'm the best and I have done this for 20 years and who are these new people?
Yeah.
You can either choose this way, which I think is a dead end. Or you can really, really take it as a great chance to overcome your little fucking DJ ego.
Yeah, 100%.
And be like really welcoming to the whole new things, the whole new era that is starting to happen. And I don't want to settle down and be like, oh, I don't need to prove myself. No, I had to prove myself every DJ gig in the last 25 years, and I'm happy to continue to do that. Because I think the DJing is an amazing thing, because of course you get older and people are looking at younger faces, but with DJing, there's a big factor which should not be underestimated, and it's routine, experience, and knowledge.
Yeah.
Like musical knowledge, the experience to deal with any situation that you get into at a festival or in a club, you know, what kind of crowd is in front of you, or can you rock it or not? And the routine to basically know what you're doing and to basically be so secure of your own art and maybe that's the wrong word to say, frame it, but you know what I mean. To be comfortable in your own skin, to be delivering, and maybe that you know is not as effective in the today's Instagram world.
Yeah,
with 30 seconds attention span or 20 seconds attention span, but I do think there's a quality to it that, if you embrace it, it'll have a place. It has a place.
Totally.
And it has a place at every festival.
Yeah.
And you just have to redefine. I have to redefine my own career in a way, you know. You're not the alpha guy anymore that is like at every festival at the main time.
Yeah.
No, but I want to be the guy who still be able to show the crowd who's wants to listen, to show them my idea of techno.
Yeah.
To basically provide something that maybe requires a little bit more patience of the crowd,
yeah,
a bit more, you know, endurance.
Yeah.
And things like that.
Well, I think it's also, I totally agree with you. I do totally agree with you. And I think, I guess what I'm thinking is you're saying that you've been touring for 25 years as a DJ. Like, if you've been doing something for 25 years, you're not just going to bow over and just let and quit.
No.
There has to be a reason why you've been doing it for 25 years, right? There has to be a reason, like, through all the good times and the bad times. Even if you're like an investment banker, right, and you've been doing it for 25 years, you're going to have lost millions of dollars and you're going to have made millions of dollars. It's the same in the music world. Maybe not millions of dollars, maybe. But, like, it's still, you have the ebbs and flows of a career. And if you still can stick it out and you're still talking about the passion of it 25 years later, there's nothing that's going to, that you've not come across that you can't deal with. And there's nothing that's going to hold you back because a new kid on the block is taking your spot.
But there's one thing, and that is your own ego.
Yeah.
That could make you bitter, and that is the thing that you could stumble and fall into this trap.
We all know people that that's happened to people.
Mm-hmm.
We all know people that's hit them, that's happened to them. But
yeah.
I think also that I like talking about the whole ego thing a lot because it's really interesting. But I also think there's a level of, and with the ego becomes expectations of, I should be getting this and I should be getting that. And why am I not getting that? And why am I not getting this?
Yeah.
And for me, that kind of stopped during the pandemic massively. Like I had that a little bit pre-pandemic, and during the pandemic, I really like took a kind of step back from everything and assessed the situation, realized there's space for everybody. And there's, I shouldn't get anything. I shouldn't be. There's plenty more people that are doing stuff better than me, just as good as me, but or maybe not as in demand. But there's also a level of people can just get lazy and just not carry on with the craft as well as they were at the beginning, and not push themselves, which then makes people fall behind.
That is very true, yeah. But then obviously the ambition is lacking.
Yeah.
I mean, it can happen. Age, you know, different life circumstances, different ideas of what you want to have in life, you know. There's some DJs who chosen the path of like, I don't want to do this whole circus anymore, you know.
Yeah.
And I just take a step back, and which is, I think it's great, but it must be to a certain degree difficult, you know.
Yeah.
I don't, my ego is still there.
Yeah.
And I'm aware of it. And I think that's the most important thing, that you're aware of it, and your reaction time to like being aware of it and when it happens, you know. Because you of course you sit there and you think to yourself, like, how can I compete with today's Instagram and TikTok success crowd, like DJs who become very, very successful through Instagram and TikTok, and promoters see like, oh, this person has way more clicks than this person, and I don't book anymore who plays the better music or who puts on the better show. I book the person who has the more clicks, because that gives me more reach, and this is better for my business.
Yeah.
You have to understand that. And it is hard to, it's a bitter pill to swallow for a lot of us, to be honest, but that's how it goes.
Yeah.
You better be okay with it. You know, it's like, hey, and amazing. And I can tell you one thing. I think whoever has a million followers now on Instagram and is a DJ, they really deserve it too. I always was a really big believer. Whoever has success on a big level, no matter where, if it's a reality star, an actor, great artist, they deserve it.
Yeah.
Because one, they did something right. They have done something right. You can bitch about it, but they've done something right to be there. And most DJs that I know who are really big right now and who only came up in the last 5-6 years, they know their craft.
Yeah.
They really know how to DJ. I look at them as like, yeah, right. Yeah, this person can actually DJ. Yeah. That's true. You know? And what does it do to you? Well, it just pushes me to also
get better.
Like, get better, you know, always learn. Like, I'm still not there where I want to be, and I'm never going to be where I want to be. Yeah. And this is kind of the carrot that's in front of me, and I want to follow that.
How do you cope with that, though? How do you cope with that? You're never where you're at, because I can massively relate to that. But like, how do you cope with that? Like, you've never reached the goal. Once you hit the goal, there's a next goal kind of waiting in the background, like almost devil on your shoulder kind of thing, where you're just like, there's no end goal.
Yeah, I kind of embrace it. I kind of actually, I think that pushes me as well. There's nothing older than the record you released yesterday.
Yeah.
And in the moment that I listen to the master, I already feel like, ah, I could have done this completely different and better. But you could, hey, that's okay, because I have the next chance, and I have the next chance. And I'll just like, I can't, like, once something is out, I kind of forget about it. It's like, that's over. Yeah. Forget it. It's like, this is only like another cobblestone on the road that you're traveling on. And I kind of embrace that feeling. I just like, it just pushes me to sit again in this studio and just like sit again on a new mix and try new things and see what's happening and what's good. And it's just so beautiful that you constantly learn. And the biggest thing that I think I keep learning, especially recently, is just don't think so complicated.
Like,
don't be so fucking complicated. Everything could be really, really simple and easy, because what's simple and easy to you might sound complicated to others.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, and that's kind of always constant learning curve. And I just love this. I wake up every morning and I'm just like totally blessed that I'm able to do what I'm doing.
No, you're right. You're right. We have a fucking amazing job. It's the best.
Yeah,
it's the best. Do you set goals?
Thanks everyone out there.
do you are you like a goal setter, like career goals, life goals? How do you kind of do that, or are you just like just keep going?
I'm more in the bracket of just keep going.
Yeah.
Isn't there like, you know, when you follow those success gurus or something, like, aren't they always telling you need to set a goal and to achieve it? I've never been that guy somehow. Yeah. Like, I just want to get the best out of the moment, what I'm doing right now. And I'm a strong believer that leads me into the next good moment.
Yeah.
And I think maybe it's good to have certain goals, like, you know, where you want to be in the long run. But at the same time, you need to be willing to let go of these ideas.
Yeah.
And just follow your heart again, you know, because that changes. It changes what you want to do. Life situation changes.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of things change.
Yeah, for me, I'm a big goal setter. I love setting goals. Definitely.
And what kind of goals? Because I think that's the definition thing. Of course, I have goals as well that I want to have, and the next release should be really, really good and should maybe hit this and that and work on these dance floors. But so, nothing like in 5 years I want to be there and there and there, because I don't think that's kind of working.
Yeah, I don't do that. More so, I do yearly goals. So I do at the end of every year, I go through my old goal list, but I then write in like December, I write new goals for the next year. And then
can you give an example?
Yeah.
Of a goal?
Let me just like, I'll pull them up.
Yeah.
I guess like a certain amount of shows in a different territory that I don't tour in specifically. Let's say, for instance, with this podcast, like have a goal of like how many subscribers we have at the end of the year. And having sponsors on the podcast or doing something like that, having like where there's like a growth involved where you have to get something to a certain level to then get to that next goal. And then how do you grow from there? Like for this year, mine was like grow my record label, like sign more artists to my record label. Some of them are financial goals as well. And then I have my outside of my career goals, I also have life goals. And like outside of like one of them is literally like be happy. Like it sounds crazy, but it's like in the rat race of this life, it can be very draining. And when you're constantly on the go, it can be like that. So yeah, I do that every year. And then I go through every 6 months, I review them with my manager and we kind of go, okay, well this goal has changed. Like I've got all my list of goals from like day one with that I started working with my manager, and like some of them change and some of them are just completely unachievable because of what I do. If you know what I mean? Like, I remember one of them was like sign a record to Maceo Plex label. If you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, I don't make that music. Like as much as I love his music and I play his music and I've got friends on the labels, I don't make that music. So Will, come on, that's completely unachievable unless you wanted to like, again, do what you were saying is like change everything I do.
Yeah.
It's not achievable.
Would that be a goal that was ego driven?
It wasn't an ego driven thing. It was just because I absolutely love what he does. And it was more of like a respect thing. It's like, this is more of a thing that I want to do for myself. Realistically, I don't know because I've not done it, but I don't know if it would change my career by doing that. But it was more, I guess it is an ego thing if you think about it, but it's an ego.
Which is not negative.
No.
Like, please, everybody who's listening, the ego thing is not entirely a negative thing. Yeah. You need to have some certain ego. Otherwise, we wouldn't be where we are now, right?
Exactly. And yeah, I guess if you kind of really want to dig deeper into it, yeah, it is, because it's something that excites me for myself and it's super selfish. Like it's got nothing, it wouldn't benefit anybody apart from myself.
I know those things.
And I think you're right, you need those things. And there's certain things that like on those goal lists that it's purely for that. It's purely a pat on my back, if you know what I mean.
I mean, we're human. We need validation. And I think we seek validation here and there. And if you're a fan of something, to have that person or whoever runs the label or that band, like basically coming to you and saying like, what you do, I want to release, or what you do is good. It's like,
Yeah.
Of course it soothes my ego, but it's not a negative thing. It's like, wow, I've achieved something that, you know, it's also a little bit giving back, maybe, you know, it's like you've been inspired by it. You want to give back a little bit. Isn't that how it goes?
And I think that's the whole point of like this industry and life. It is about giving back. And it's like, even to the like smallest of things, but like realistically, let's talk about this conversation that we're having now. Like, I would never have thought you would have played one of my records, if you know what I mean. You played one of my records. Crazy, right? Like, and then you asked me to do the podcast. Your podcast. I would never have thought I would be on your podcast. Like, not because, like, it just was never what I thought would ever happen, if you know what I mean. And then, would I ever thought that you'd come on this podcast? No. But like, that's the amazing thing about what we do, is that like, it's all about like giving back and helping each other out. Like, you scratch my back, I scratch your back. We all have a great conversation. And this is the start of hopefully a friendship that will last for years. And we can support each other for the rest of our careers. And I think that's the amazing thing with art, is that if you can take that ego out of it and accept that people are doing their own thing and on their own path, and you're willing to support that in every way possible, not just on a surface level thing, not just by saying, oh, I really support you, by actually supporting you. There's so many people that will go, oh, I love your new stuff, blah, 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 blah. Like, you're amazing, you're the best. And then talk utter shit behind your back. If you're truly authentically supporting somebody and willing to kind of give them knowledge and help them get to where they want to do, or even just be there as for a conversation, that helps me, you, that helps you, by giving back, you help yourself. And that's fucking so important.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, scratching each other's back is not necessarily in a way of manufactured success or financial gain or something like that. Like, it's, I know what you mean, but it's, you know, there's a huge difference for me. It is between what I play.
Yeah.
The music selection that I play and what I love to listen to.
Yeah, totally.
Like, same. What I love to listen to is like,
yeah,
wow, there's so much good music out there. There's so much amazing. I love to listen to your sets. I love to listen to Nicole Mudaba's sets. I love to listen to so many DJs, but they're playing records that I could not fit into my selection.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And sometimes there's this one record and there's this record here and there that fits into my selection. So there's a big difference between like this narrow range of music that I'm playing, which I want to showcase when I'm DJing, and the music that I really love to listen to. And because I have a platform, I can share this passion of what I'm listening to.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that is the beautiful thing of having that podcast. I can basically invite all those DJs that I admire and that I think are doing a great job and showcase their music. And I think that's awesome. That's because you have that platform. And it's the other way around, I guess, for you, having the platform of this talk here, that you can invite a hardstyle DJ, music that you would never play.
Exactly.
You know, me, techno DJ, a lot of, like 99% of the tracks that I play, you probably would never play.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But we can talk about it and we can share our experiences, and people who are interested can listen and maybe take the little bits out of it. And that's how we like keep going, everybody. And I think that's the really beautiful thing.
I totally agree. I think we should wrap it on that. That's an hour.
We have to wrap it already.
That's an hour. That's an hour and a half. And I think like we could keep going, but I think we'll probably do another one in the future. So let's end it there. And dude, thank you so much for coming on. I really, really appreciate it. I've really enjoyed this conversation. It's been good.
Well, thank you so much as well. And for me, it feels like we've just started to have a conversation.
Definitely. I know.
It's always the same. It's always the same. There's so much more we can talk about. And I've always felt that with all the talks that you had with other people. It's like, there's so much more, but yeah, of course we have to stick to a certain time.
We don't have to, but I guess the thing is like, then we're just feeding our own egos. Exactly. and people were just like, fucking shut up. It's just two dudes talking about shit.
Yes.
No, I love it. But thank you so much. How can people follow you? How can people get involved? How can people listen to your podcast? How can people kind of get involved with your community?
Find me on Instagram, for example, and to take it from there. And then I have my CLR podcast, which is released every Friday, I believe. Monday. I think it's Monday. Sorry. At some places it's Friday, Mixcloud Select, for example. So there's a great variety of DJs. Will is one of them. And and that's just go out, have fun, people.
Amazing. Thanks, man. Keep safe and I'll see you soon.
See you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye. Stay on. And that is a wrap. Big love to everybody that listened. Big love to Chris. Please share it. Please subscribe. Join the community. Link is in the description. Keep safe. Till next time.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.